This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Shaoning. It's 7.06 in the morning, Wednesday the 10th of July. And overnight, US markets closed mixed. The Dow Jones was down 0.1%, the S&P 500 up 0.1%, but the Nasdaq was 0.5% higher. Now, markets are still awaiting a slew of central bank news this week. On Wednesday in the US, we'll see both the Fed minutes as well as the Fed Chairman Jerome Powell testifying before Congress on monetary policy and the state of the US economy.
And it's very much a mixed bag in the rest of Asia. The up markets were Japan, Singapore and FBM KLCI, which all of them were only slightly up. And the down markets, very much Hong Kong, 0.8% down, I think, lingering concerns over for the crisis over there. And Shanghai and Korea are slightly down.
Now, for more insights into global markets, we have on the line Dodge Dorland, Chief Investment Officer at Lander Wealth Management. Thank you for joining us, Dodge. Now, Deutsche Bank is undergoing a massive round of job cuts. While the stock trades at historic lows, do you think it's time to buy?
Well, good morning. Not yet. Let's see if they can prove that they can do this. It's going to take time to cut and to reorganize. There is an execution risk. They left their core business behind back in the 90s, and they are talking about also about resizing their fixed income operations, so that's something in the future. Let's see if they can make this work. It's a huge challenge. I think they can do it, but from an investment point of view, let's make them prove that they're on the right track before making an investment.
With that, Dodge, do you have any banking stocks that you do like?
We are looking at Citibank, J.P. Morgan. We also like Goldman Sachs, which I guess you can call a bank. By definition, it is, but it's obviously more than a bank, and it's obviously involved in some of the areas that Deutsche Bank is getting out of. So those are the three choices. I think J.P. Morgan, Citibank are on the top of our list, and we're watching Goldman Sachs.
Dodge, I read that the banking stocks have performed very well this year to the extent of up almost 20% in as far as U.S. banks are concerned. Does this concern you as far as relative valuations are concerned with the rest of the market?
Yes, it does, and that's why we don't have a position yet. But if there's some continuation in the positive reaction on the markets to what is happening economically and geopolitically, we probably would take more of a position. We would actually take a position, particularly in the three stocks that we were talking about. But again, it's time for the market to prove itself to the upside. And so we're going to be watching very carefully how the market reacts over obviously tomorrow morning, our time.
And Dodge, since you mentioned valuations, I mean, the Bloomberg data shows that the S&P 500 is trading at a forward PE of 18 times, which, as we know, is above the long-term average mean. Does this mean that markets now are expensive, or is the street behind the curve in revising their earnings?
Well, they're both. Yes, the market is expensive. Yes, valuations are behind. But you have to take a look at what the market is actually doing, regardless of what the street is evaluating. There's been little follow-through yesterday to Monday's market pullback. Dow Jones Industrial Average closed well above its lows for the session with a nominal 0.08% loss. The S&P ended with 0.12% higher, not much, but again, higher. The lack of selling has been evident. You can look at our up volume, which dominates with 54% of the total up-down volume. Advances were 51% of the total advancing declining issues. At 3 billion shares, the New York composite volume was 10% above the level on Monday's pullback. All that we're seeing is suggesting only a limited potential for further near-term weakness. Yes, we'll watch the reaction to what Chairman Powell says, but the market has more strength and something has to happen to make it a more serious pullback at this point.
Speaking of Jerome Powell, Dodger, he testifies before Congress tomorrow in the US, in U.S. time. So what kind of language will investors be looking out for to indicate the pace of rate cuts going forward?
That's an excellent question. The questions Powell's going to have to answer will be much more pointed than what he has in the past. We want to make sure he says independent of the president, data dependent would be good. Well, we're going to watch out for the word patient, because if he uses the word patient, then what we're going to want to hear fairly closely to that right after is if he uses strong numbers, listen for an offset, like, but we're going to take an aggregate view. So even if they're strong numbers, if he says aggregate view, it somewhat weakens the minus of the strong numbers. I doubt if he's going to bring up the New York Federal report on rising recession probabilities, because he doesn't want anything more dovish in the market than what the market's already having now. I doubt 50%, 50 basis points is still on the table. I think 25 is very likely, because if he doesn't do it, the market's going to react very negatively. And if the market reacts negatively, then it's going to affect economically, which will in turn require him to lessen lower rates. So it's going to be we're going to watch every single word he says. But again, data-dependent, independent of the president. If he uses strong numbers, we're going to have to watch very quickly for something to offset that. Otherwise, the likelihood of a reduction is much less likely.
Good speaking with you, Dodge. Thank you very much for joining us. That was Dodge Dolland of Landa Wealth Management, weighing in with his expectations for the language that Jerome Powell is going to be using at Congress, or what he's going to be watching out for, specifically whether or not Jerome Powell says he'll be independent of the president, whether the decisions will be data dependent, and whether or not the Fed will be a patient going forward.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. let's see what Jerome Powell says tonight.
All right, but in other international headlines, PepsiCo's earnings are in and their quarterly revenue and profit beat analyst estimates. Revenue rose 2.2% to $16.4 billion, beating expectations of $16.43. Now, the company reported that the currency fluctuations negatively impacted its revenue in the second quarter.
Now, higher sales were driven by traditional Pepsi soda, along with snack foods like Lay's and Doritos. Now, apart from traditional drinks, the company also saw growth in their smaller, less sugary products, like cans of flavored sparkling water. This is very much in line with the consumer trend of growing health consciousness. And even we see that in the FMCGs, fast-moving consumer goods, in terms of what they're offering, like even in the case of Malaysia.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the FMCG companies are very well demanded by investors across the world because the earnings are very stable. It's a representation of consumer spending. But also not forgetting that there is always this perennial battle between Pepsi and Coke, right? And Pepsi is actually worth five times more than Coke at 185 billion market capitalization. And it's all about all these turf wars. Mm. That's why they're coming out with different flavors, Pepsi for mango, and Coke coming up with an orange vanilla flavor.
Ginger. No, Pepsi is the one with the ginger. But yeah. I think Pepsi's growth was driven much by its food division.
Yeah, its snack division was its strongest performer. So Frito-Lay North America reported about 5% organic growth, led by growth in convenience and dollar stores. But you know what, guys? There's also another company in the media. Another company
in the news.
This morning. And it is a media company. And that's Netflix and Warner Media, because traditional media companies like AT&T-owned Warner Media, they're trying to beat Netflix at their own game. And long-beloved TV show Friends will soon be leaving Netflix.
Yeah, I think this is inevitable because Netflix right now either does one of two things. They either do their own production, of which they have, I think, a 10 to 20 billion US dollar budget per annum to create their own content. But the other thing that they can do is borrow from a lot of the other broadcasting production houses, which in the long term is not going to be a good strategy, because these guys are also setting up their subscription platforms, right? Disney and HBO and so on. This will be a strategic disadvantage for Netflix.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, because Netflix was originally the disruptor in this situation, and now roles are really reversed, because in terms of the streaming, in terms of streaming platforms, Netflix is now the incumbent, and you're seeing the traditional media starting to nibble away at their market share. So it's going to be really interesting to watch how this goes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.